It's Marketplace Tech for February 2nd. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. When Facebook went public 5 years ago, Mark Zuckerberg said about the company's hacker culture that, quote, "Hackers believe that something can always be better and that nothing is ever complete." Apt, considering the company's troubled IPO in 2012, has over time led to record growth and revenue. Facebook's latest earnings report this week continued to beat expectations on revenue. Key point here, though, most of its advertising cash coming in, over $7 billion, is from mobile. And mobile ad growth is slowing. So Facebook is looking to find new ways to make money off of video advertising, for instance. Cut to a new report in the Wall Street Journal suggesting that Facebook is trying to bring its mobile video to your television in an app. CNET editor-in-chief Lindsay Turrentine is here to chat more. Lindsay, great to have you on.
It's great to be here, Ben.
So why would Facebook try to go backwards here from mobile video to getting video onto people's televisions?
Well, Facebook is running out of places to advertise in the mobile feed. And it's been experimenting with video a lot, trying to get all of its users really used to this idea of accepting video as part of your news feed on Facebook. But it's hard to advertise against silent video, and it's hard to advertise against very short video, which is what works best on Facebook. So Facebook has to look for new places to put advertisements, especially if it's pursuing video as a primary strategy. And your television in your living room is really a great place for video, it turns out.
What will this look like? Kind of like selecting a Netflix app on a smart TV, except it's the Facebook app?
So I think what you'll see is a lot of the video that's currently available on Facebook coming through an app that looks something like YouTube, but then with some options for longer form viewing with media partnerships that Facebook is reportedly pursuing.
Are you going to be clicking on that Facebook app?
I'll be clicking on the Facebook app for sure, to give it a chance. And the key is, and it always is, will that app have some programming that I really want to watch? Because I don't have a lot of time. It has to be really good.
Fair enough. We'll see. Lindsay Turrentine, editor-in-chief at CNET. Lindsay, nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Ben.
Big companies make big money off of our data. This is a fact in a world full of free digital products and huge pools of information that are more valuable in the aggregate than they are at the individual level. Example, Google, sure. Facebook, yep. Amazon, definitely. Also, data brokers you've never heard of, like Axiom or Intellius, that collect information about you and sell it to other companies. While the former chief scientist of Amazon is on a mission to give us more control over our own data, Andreas Weigand's life has informed his work as someone whose parents were working in East Germany during the Cold War. His new book is Data for the People, How to Make Our Post-Privacy Economy Work for You. Andreas, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Why did you write this book?
I wrote the book because I believe that data can be used to empower people. I try to figure out what should our rights be so our data, the data we create and share, is used for us.
I would imagine a lot of like terms of service agreements that we sign make it so that the data is not owned by us.
Even worse, in most cases, they ask us to lie, to say that we have read and understood some like 44-page agreement. Otherwise, we can't continue. That is not the rights which I want to waive, not even knowing what I waive them for.
We were just talking before we really started the interview in earnest about your own experience asking for information about your dad, trying to get your dad's data. Can you talk about that?
The story about my father is that he passed away and then afterwards, I learned that it is possible to gain access to the data the Stasi, the secret police in East Germany, had about people. Mm-hmm. So you need to do this in writing. I wrote the letter. And a couple of months later, I get a letter back saying, well, we are sorry to protect the innocence of the informants. There is no data available about your dad. But since you asked, here would be the cover sheet of your own Stasi file. So that was amazing to me that, you know, I was a kid at the time. And then, you know, East Germany, I was a grad student when East Germany collapsed, that they already started collecting data about me.
How are you thinking about Donald Trump's administration and how it may deal with questions about data?
For people coming to the country, I cannot believe how intelligent people would ask them to give them social media information.
You're talking about this policy from the Department of Homeland Security that actually began under the Obama administration, the idea being that when certain people come into the country, they may be asked for their social media handles or accounts.
But if you think about that, it will only really hit people, innocent people. And then if you have exponentially growing amounts of data about people, there's always something problematic about them. We need to realize that some data is wrong. I would expect people in the United States of America to think about what they're asking people and not having a naive question which ultimately will only work against the people and not for the people.
Andreas Weigand, he's the author of Data for the People. Andreas, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And SpaceX head and Mars colonization evangelist Elon Musk says he will bring input from Twitter followers on the travel ban to Donald Trump at their next meeting. While game developer David Stark's input is a choose-your-own-adventure game called Martian Immigration Nightmare. I've played it. You stand in several airport lines as a prospective Mars traveler only to have your travel plans blocked at every turn. The name, yes, it is accurate. Want to play this frustrating game? We tweeted it from @MarketplaceTech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.